apply.
At SFM Radio and at Stephen Grootes on Twitter.
Well, there's been a series of conversations around the possibility of reform in South Africa. And you may remember when President Cyril Ramaphosa first came into office, he said that there was going to be proper structural reform. There was a time when the then Finance Minister, Tito Mboweni, I think he described it as his hallelujah moment, that there would also be a reform of the economy. And in fact, if you go back far enough to 2017, when President Cyril Ramaphosa was first running for office as leader of the ANC in that election, the CR17 campaign, he essentially said that there would be reform, that there would be a big social compact. And yet, there's quite a lot of criticism about what's happened since then. The Centre for Development and Enterprise says that it now believes that the ANC and its leader are stuck, and that there will not be reform. Anne Bernstein is the Executive Director at the Centre. Anne, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen.
Why do you believe the President and the ANC will not conduct reform? Why do you say that now?
Well, I was enthusiastic 5 years ago about the possibility that we might get some reform from the President, from the new President. And CDE has done a lot of work on reform. We put forward lots of proposals. We thought he meant it when he said he wanted evidence-based policy making, and he really was going to turn South Africa in a new direction. There have been a few reforms, and Operation Vulindlela to help him do that in the presidency is a good thing. But the reforms are too small. They move at glacial speed, and the truth is that unless you fix the state, unless you say, we are going in a new direction, I need new people who are not compromised, who actually can do the job, who can fix big systems from the ports to rail to energy, we're not going to get anywhere, and that's exactly what's happened. I think the country is stuck now. We don't have leadership. We lurch from crisis to crisis, and every time we get an eloquent description of the crisis, but then we have the same old strategy to fix it, instead of a whole new approach with new people who are competent.
What do you think's holding him back? I mean, if his stated intention was to have reform, why do you think it hasn't happened?
Well, I think he says one thing and does another, but fundamentally, there are some hard choices South Africa has to make. We need to change policy direction. And I'm under no illusion that this is difficult for the ruling party. But unless you make those decisions and you lead in your own party and, if necessary, take some hard decisions and confront your opponents, you don't get anywhere, and that's exactly what's happened. The strategy that ANC unity is the paramount strategy for the president rather than what the country needs is why South Africa is one of the main reasons South Africa is in such deep trouble.
You said he needed to confront his opponents. Do you think that's the problem, that he doesn't want to fight?
Look, in December 2018, the president got a report from Sidney Mufamadi about the sort of things that were going on in our security establishment. I would call them treason. But he didn't do anything. And even after the attempted insurrection in 2021 and his own panel report, which told him of all the problems in that cluster, I haven't read of any senior person being charged or subject to disciplinary action. So even at that very fundamental level of a threat to the constitutional order and peace in South Africa, we're not seeing decisive action.
What kind of reform do you think we need?
I think we need a whole lot of things. So on the policy front, I don't think it makes any sense at all to say we're going to have a developmental state. We want monopoly state enterprises to provide critical services. When the state is corrupt and in very many areas collapsing around us, You can't have a state-driven approach, whatever your ideology. You have to look at where there is capacity in South Africa, and that's in the private sector and the non-government sector. And you have to say, what's working? What can we build on? And how do we use the enormous power of markets, properly regulated? And, you know, we can talk about redistribution of the sort of taxes, but you've got to actually work on where we have capacity. Mm. And you can't say in one breath, oh, I want lots of investments and I want to bring the private sector in, but then you ratchet up all the demands on the redistribution of those profits and you add new restrictions on localization of where companies must buy things from and what they must. That's crazy. That's part of the reason we're not getting any new sort of significant greenfield investment. So I would change the monopoly approach to state-owned enterprises. We need markets to operate in those areas, and we need a very different philosophy of governance where the state does the basics well, and that will be hard enough in South Africa, and you free up market players to really start delivering for South Africans.
Do you, one of the things that seems to me which may be happening is that there's almost a reform by emergency. Government may be losing control of certain things. So, for example, I would say probably 5-10 years ago, government and perhaps the governing party would have preferred not to really have much private sector involvement in electricity. I realize there was a decision in 1998 that there would be, but, you know, now, simply because of emergency, now there's a lot more private sector investment in electricity. Some of it's going to the grid, some of it's just being done by people themselves or companies themselves. So government loses control of that. Another example may be at Transnet, where because literally of the emergency on our railways, there's talk, and Transnet's looking for a private public operator to help it run the Joburg to KwaZulu-Natal corridor. SAA is perhaps an even better example of all of it, because it was so close to collapse. Part of that was COVID, but it had been a problem for many, many years. Now there's sort of a sort of privatization. Is that what's happening, and what happens when that happens, when you have that sort of privatization by emergency?
So in part, I agree with you, Stephen, but I think you've got to distinguish talk, the rhetoric, from actual involvement of the private sector. So it's happening in a very ad hoc basis. It's not happening nearly sort of on a big enough scale. Take infrastructure. I ran a big workshop on this with senior people in government and the senior investors in the country, and this has been a centerpiece of what the president wanted to do, infrastructure-led growth. But when you dig down below the rhetoric and below everyone being polite to each other, there's actually been no significant private sector-led infrastructure project since he became president. Why? Because the government talks a good game, but they haven't got the rules and regulations right. They don't know how to engage with the private sector. And we're not getting the kind of environment in which the private sector can risk money. So it's the same with Transnet. They want the private sector to invest in, you know, fixing some of the train lines. But then it's only for 2 years and there are all sorts of restrictions. It shows a failure to understand how capital works. And secondly, unless the problem with privatization by stealth is that the words are starting to emerge, I agree with you, but we're not really getting it. And so what happens is the rich can privatize lots of services. You and me, you know, private security, private this, private that. But the poor are left at the very brunt of no service delivery or very extortionate kind of last-minute private sector provision. This is not a way to run the country.
Anne Bernstein, thank you very much indeed. Executive Director at the Center for Development and Enterprise. Really do appreciate the time. Well, a strong view, and I suspect that coming up ahead of the State of the Nation address. There are going to be many more strong views about what people want, about what they think is going to happen, and probably criticism, as you heard there, even before the speech is being made. I'm also not sure what's going to happen at the hearing itself, you know, when the president stands up to give the State of the Nation address, whether we're actually going to see, you know, a peaceful event, whether we're going to see it being focused on policy, or whether it will sort of be all about disruption. Very interesting to see how that all plays out next week. SAFM. Prime time.